He's great. I mean, unbelievable. To the extent that almost instantaneously, I didn't think of him as Leo. He was Bob Ferguson.
You great. Good, homie? You good?
Yeah, just getting high. And then his complete angst with French 75 trying to verify his identity was also like number two, probably for like laughable moments. And welcome to the Scene Weekly podcast, where two part-time cinematics give their best mid-level takes on all things on screens. This week's episode is focused on Paul Thomas Anderson's new flick out in the movies right now, One Battle After Another. And here we're going to battle it out, I think, maybe once or twice over the next 45 minutes. Come join Jonathan and Steven for another week of hopefully less plot chatter and copious more film banter. We are Scene Weekly, and welcome to our shirts.
That's a nice shirt, Jonathan. I like it. Looks very European.
It is European, and I bought this in preparation to go to Europe a few weeks ago. And, well, I guess in July. Could be still a few weeks. And depending on who says weeks and who says a few. But I was going to Marshall's in between my daughter, who was having a Brazilian jiu-jitsu class, and I had 45 minutes to shop. And I wanted all my clothes from the waist up to look like Tony Soprano had just thrown it into a hamper. I guess I'm not saying that I want homeless people clothes or like dirty clothes, but I did want the look.
Sounds like it.
Of somebody who would look like Tony, but I don't look anything like him, so I don't really pull this off. But you have a V that it continually pointing to your dick.
Yes, I do.
I
basically, my idea was, what if I was a time traveler from 1982 and I just showed up? What would I be wearing? And I think this is kind of appropriate here.
Upside down triangles.
Yeah.
Point to your penis. It's almost as if you're wearing like one of those, like, what is this color in the middle and on the sleeves?
I don't know, like a greenish gray.
We're two of the people that we should not be asking.
Yeah.
But it looks as if that's something, if that, whatever color that is, don't show the rest of it. Now it's ruining what I was about to say. Like Clint Eastwood and name any of
like
his westerns would be wearing. Yeah. It looks pretty nice. But anyway, this is the first time outside of last year where, during the Oscars season, we got to actually go to the movies and watch what was actually out and playing, opposed to, you know, something. Even like things, you got to hit things like in the first month, or else they're either going to streaming that first month, or it's like the second month and then that's gone. Like literally, I was trying to plan this because you had seen it and I was going to go to the theater the day before you, and the theater I was going to go to was like, nope. We're done with the movie now. I'm like, the one movie I could literally watch in theaters, and it's gone from the one theater I normally go to. And then you had seen it. And then I looked for the following Friday. I was able to drive a little bit of time, 20 miles, to go and see this movie with a friend of mine, which was nice. Very nice. So,
yeah, mine was definitely One Battle After Another, just to go see this movie. And I'll tell you why. I've been looking forward to it for a while, and I live in LA, which is one of the four
Humble
cities. One of the four cities in the world that is showing this movie in a specific format, and that format is called VistaVision, which hasn't been a format since the 60s. So this is the first true film to be shown in that format, which is basically 35 millimeters. Turned around. It's a weird format, but it's kind of like a precursor to IMAX in a way. The other four cities are New York, Boston, London, and here in Los Angeles at Quentin Tarantino's theater, The Vista. I was looking at it like, you know, weeks before it came out, and every single showing was sold out, just sold out. And this is one of those theaters where you can't select your seats. It's like the old school way. You just show up and hope you get a good seat, right? So I finally booked one 10 a.m. showing at the Vista. And I'm pumped. I'm like, all right, I worked the night before. I'm going to get home, get some good sleep, get there early, get in line, maybe get a coffee because there's Pam's Coffee right next door. Quentin Tarantino owns that too. But I get a call from my girlfriend at 1 a.m.
And oh, dear.
She's having some problems with her plumbing and her toilet's exploding.
Metaphorical?
No. Not metaphorical. Literal problems with her
plumbing. Oh, dear. Exploding? And did she put like an M80 in it?
Yeah, it looked like that when I got there. But
does she take big shits? Is that what you're saying?
See, that was my first inclination of
because you take giant ones and you're like two people the same, you know, cut from the same cloth. At 1 a.m. to have plumbing issues is problematic. Good on you to keep your phone on, first of all.
Well, I was closing that night, so I was coming home from work. Yeah. Yeah. Already up.
Not so good of you then. You know, you didn't really do anything.
Well, I went over there to help out with the plumbing to see if I could
clean
up
the shit.
Yeah, clean up the shit. Do some plungering, if you will. And I plungered, man. I plungered for a good solid hour. The bathtub was
plunged for an hour?
Yeah.
Dude, that's solid plunging. I don't think plumbers plunge that way. No, there's no way.
I mean, I was trying to get it to work. I was, you know.
Did you put water in first and then plunge? Because I found that to be very successful.
Yeah, water does help, but then it would the tank would fill up, and I would have to mitigate that because I didn't want it to overflow into the you know, it was a whole thing. And I was like, all right, we got the water down. It's not fixed. It's not fixed. Let's go to sleep. We got an early morning. Let's try it in the morning and then go to the movie. Wake up, go get in the morning, still plunging away. Nothing's working. My girlfriend, Olivia, bless her heart. She was just like, I don't even want to go to the movie. You should just go. I'm going to stay here in case it explodes. I'm like, you know, I'm not going to go to the movie either. Let's just figure this out. Whatever. And then we finally ended up deciding like, there's nothing we can do to fix this situation. Let's just go to the movie and hopefully we'll get good seats and we
get take shits there
and take shit. Yeah. Because we needed to, and we get there and we don't get the best seats. We're pretty close to the front row side. But I got to see the movie at 10 a.m. after, man, plunging is a workout.
Yeah. That's surprising that you did not, because every time I've ever had an issue there, by the way, your story should be called One Turd After Another. Yeah. Clearly. I've never had, new toilets over here, mind you. Never had an issue, though. You know.
It's good like, on you because it you sucks.
You get a little water in the bowl, and you might get a little splash of turd juice on you, but you 1 hour is a long time. That must have been a supremely horrible. I mean, you just snake at that point. It's just
we called an actual plumbing company later that afternoon,
and snake it out.
Yeah, snake it out. It turns out it wasn't a big turd from
it was
me
a bra.
Or no, it was a 3 foot like tree limb that got stuck in the pipes somehow.
Pardon me.
Yeah, a tree limb.
So just shot through.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how those things work, but it was a battle, and I had a workout. But I got to see the movie, one battle after another, and that's the main point here.
How many ounces of turd juice did you get on you? You think?
Oftentimes
the turds are left in the bowl. Was a turd left in the bowl, or was it just like clogged up and it's water?
By that point, it was water. I think.
Oh, that's good.
I think Olivia got most of it. Most of it out before I got there, thankfully.
Because like that's when I go crazy. If it's just like clear, I'm like,
that's what I was doing. Like, I was like,
yeah.
She gave me gloves to put on. I was like, I don't need gloves. This is just water. Just gonna go at
full,
it.
Full rain. Yeah, you don't. You're gonna get blisters. So anyway, how'd we get here? We wanted to change it up, watch a theater in the movies. Plus, we like PTA. We love PTA over here. Over yonder. You know, to be honest with you, you recommended watching The Master, and I think I have to go back and rewatch it, but I wasn't the biggest fan, you know, of that, but I would say pretty much everything else I'm game with. is like, you know, just go back to Boogie Nights. And it's like, yeah, it's pretty. If you hate Boogie Nights, maybe you're like a priest and you hate porn. And even then, you're probably like watching on the side, you know, like this is pretty good. They're not even showing like, you know, massive amounts of titties, but like this is pretty good. But what a master. Speaking of the masters. I have to ask a question off the bat because I went back to watch this for a second time, as did you. And what were your thoughts initial on first watch on the music choices? And I mean choices because, and I'll frame this a little bit to some extent. I saw this at the end of the movie and maybe like towards the end as a combination of like either different levels of a video game, but more so like different video games kind of spliced together, in that like there are like chapters for which this movie kind of exists on its own and on the side of things, but like almost like storylines that intersect in some way, shape, or form, although there's certain overlay. But the music really set it apart for me, and I was kind of thrown for a strange loop initially and be like, what the hell is this? Like, go what? Like, it became this thing where I was like looking almost to the side of like, what is going on over here in the other room? Like, what is this? This dude on the piano, and you're trying to have a conversation, like the actors are acting, Leo's doing his thing, and then you're like, what the fuck is going on over there in the other room? Like, who are you? Can you tone it down just a little bit? And then I watched the whole of it, and I was like, oh, it all just like kind of summarizes itself together in this video game like feel, especially at the end when you're like going through the undulating motions of the hills and the road. And then I was like, oh, this all makes sense. I just had to watch the whole movie. But I'm curious. That's how I saw it. What were your thoughts initially about the music?
I picked up more on the needle drops, that the songs that he played, like Soldier Boy, and at the very end, Tom Petty, American Girl, and things like that. But it's interesting how, like, I never put this in like a frame of like how this movie does kind of feel like a video game with different levels, and you have like the final boss and
yeah,
certain scenes like that. And I think that's a cool kind of takeaway from this movie as well. But I was more interested in like, when I was watching this, the tonal kind of inconsistency of the film. And I think that's not, it's a feature, not a bug of what,
oh, yeah,
what he's trying to do here with this kind of like very serious subject matter, but having all like Looney Tune slapstick comedy, of the film, just kind of, it was like a little bit of like just whiplash of like, what is going on here?
Yeah, no, it made the movie to me. I don't necessarily, I don't think it took away anything from the movie. If anything, it was that moment of reprieve that you can actually be like, okay, whew, all right. Like, cause the energy from like after 30 minutes, you have 2 hours of like just escalating situations of like people either almost getting murdered or about to get murdered or being prepared to get killed or like some sort of energy that's just like riding this hill and you're zooming towards the top of the heavens of it. And then this is where I'm like, video game, like you have little side quests over here. I'm like, all right, like a little side quest. Let's change the music up. Let's also like insert humor. Like Leo's just getting high in his car, opening it one single time, thinking the weed's going to get out. And these moments that are purposeful, clearly from PTA, that he's going to separate the satire or include the satire in these very tense moments where, you know,
It could just be Leo looking for a phone charging outlet. Like,
dude, that was my favorite of everything. Like the whole movie of me laughing the most was that, especially the second time, because then I picked up on like more things. He's literally trying to find a phone charger. I love the fact where he's on the phone with what's the service? French 75, and trying to verify his information, but he's asking like, what time is it? And then Benicio del Toro in the restroom is like 8:15. And I was like, I picked up on it the first time, but like the second time I was crying laughing at it because he just hit it in a very dry moment. But the that charger is just epic. And he's when things are really starting to escalate, and he finally found a charger for the first time, and the boy is using his cell phone, and he's like, stop using the phone. He's like, how the fuck can you use the phone?
Not yelling
he's
at
like,
him.
Right behind, but he wasn't being yelled at. He's like, I just tried to charge it.
Everybody's been in that situation, like in a situation like that. And that's why it's so relatable.
Yeah. But why don't we get to it? Bob is a washed up revolutionary. He lives in a state of paranoia, stone paranoia at that, surviving off grid with his spirited and self-reliant daughter, Willa. When his evil nemesis resurfaces and Willa goes missing, the former radical scrambles to find her as both father and daughter battle the consequences of their past. Oh boy, do they. Whew. I like the trailer so much, I stopped it after like 45 seconds, so I didn't really know what ultimately was going to exist, and so I didn't really know what to make of it, and I purposely didn't watch. Anything that came up on my screen was just, it was forced. I didn't look at it, and it was just like given to me, so I didn't really know what to think, other than I just saw Leo running with big glasses and that, like, that, I don't know, that bathrobe.
The robe. Yeah,
bathrobe. And I was like, dude, this is probably, this is, somebody told me it had good ratings. I was like, I don't know. We'll see. But solid movie overall.
Solid. Yeah, I did the same thing. Like, I of course, saw the trailer, but I wanted to, like, know as little as possible going into it. I didn't know, like, about the revolutionaries. I heard him say, Viva la Revolution, but I didn't want to know the basic plot of the movie of, you know, the time jump in the film and the daughter going, you know, missing and or on the run, basically. And I had no idea about, like, what Sean Penn's character was going to be like in this movie. And I'm glad, because Sean Penn blew me away.
I mean, I say this, this is going to be a weird stretch, but, like, if somebody beats Sean Penn for best supporting actor, I will be shocked and saddened, because not in the first get, but I was like, almost to the extent that, like, Sean Penn was himself initially, and I could see him initially, but I didn't see him as the character yet. And then he had the little lip movements throughout, and by the third one, I was like, this motherfucker has nailed this character. And he became, like, he removed Sean Penn entirely. And I saw him recently in the Charlie Sheen documentary, and he had the same haircut as this movie. Yeah, so stupid. But, like, him, like, licking the comb to part it, I'm like, this motherfucker is insane. But again, I don't think anyone should beat him. I mean, there's movies yet to come for the rest of this year, but, like, I don't see how anyone beats that performance. It was unbelievably good.
Even his walk, like, somebody made a good comparison. It's the Vince McMahon walkout, basically. Just how he just struts like this, trying to make himself bigger, because Sean Penn's a little guy. He's not that big.
Yeah. He's jacked. My God.
Oh, it's the veins on veins. Yeah.
I was with in the scene, and they're in the Sisters of, what is it? The Sisters of whatever
the,
it is.
The Angry Beaver or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so when they're in that elongated rectangular, the church, and seeing if, like, his daughter is his daughter, and he's waiting on the chair, and she's like, why is your shirt so small? That the moment he sat down and it was, like, super jacked with the veins, like, I'm with a dude, married dude, and he's like, dude, he's jacked, look at him. And I was like, we're just, like, yelling it, basically. It was like, there's four of us in theater. I was like, he was really getting a stir out of it, to say the least. But
that's hilarious.
What a solid performance. And I'll have to go to say Leo, as a backdrop to the whole story, Leo is never taking back from, like, 2015 and before, and even what's Eating Gilbert's Grape. And I know that when he came up as a kid, people thought he was actually, like, special after that performance. I never was that affected, with the performance of any Leonardo DiCaprio movies. Truly. I liked him. Enjoyable. I never really truly thought he was an actor. Like, an actor's, like, actor. And then, like, The Revenant dropped, and I was like, oh, this motherfucker can act. Like, for real act. And then he was, you know, side by side with Tom Hardy, who I've always thought could truly act. But I think that was the moment where I changed my perspective on like how deep and far Leo can actually go into a character. And now this one, it's funny that you sent me a screenshot, which is the exact screenshot that I wanted to mention, because I've never mild terror when Sean Penn, Colonel Stephen Lockjaw, was confronting Bob Ferguson in the supermarket. And he was like, you know, you can, I don't want to repeat what he actually said in the moment because it's going to become a meme. But like the look of pure terror on Leo's face when he like was confronted with him for the first time, I was like, that literally looks like terror. Like on somebody's face, you take a snapshot, that is, they're terrified.
That's why I took a picture of that. I was like, yeah, whoa. Yeah. So that was really good. That scene in the grocery store, you know, he's basically, he knows that there's a child at play. Charlene. Now, Charlene, I've never pictured as like a black girl's name. I always think of that as like Roseanne or something like that. Charlene. But it's interesting that he said that. But yeah, that look of terror was masterful. And I gotta think about Leo and like all of the choices that he's made. I was looking at his filmography, and he specifically like goes after and works with auteurs, directors, like really well known, Spielberg, Scorsese, Nolan, but he's never worked with PTA. And I mean, I think this is just the perfect project for him to work on.
He's great. I mean, unbelievable, to the extent that almost instantaneously, I didn't think of him as Leo. He was Bob Ferguson.
You great. Good, homie? You good?
Yeah, just getting high. And then his complete angst with French 75 trying to verify his identity was also like number two, probably for like laughable moments. Just made me crack up.
I love that he finally got a hold. He had to say something like this, the Greyhawk or something like
Greyhawk,
that.
Greyhawk 10.
Yeah, give me Greyhawk 10. I'm calling Greyhawk 10 right now. And then he gets on his phone.
I got him. I got him where I want him.
Yeah.
I was like, there's no way.
His friend, he's like, relax, Bob, relax. You're going to get this question right. Relax.
Yeah, yeah.
What's my favorite kind of pussy?
Mexican hairless.
Mexican hairless.
But you could tell, like, he's like, oh, I know that. His face is like, oh, I know this. Mexican hairless. Of course. Yeah.
Of course.
It's like, what the fuck answer? What time is it? What was it? It's like, oh my God. God damn it, man.
Time doesn't exist, but it controls us.
Oh my God. But I will say, going back to the very beginning, very time of the essence movie, considering all the what's happening with ICE. I didn't know, honestly, what to think of the initial start to it when Perfidia Beverly Hills is... their French 75 is breaking into it. Yeah, like telling Sean Penn to, you know, Colonel Stephen Lockjaw to get a boner. Just get one. And I didn't know where this movie was going. Honestly, was like, what? How? And then, you know, it's really like the extreme setup of satire to come. Yeah,
it's definitely like it sets like what kind of tone this is. Like, we're in a very serious situation with, you know, ICE immigrants being held up in cages and things like that. And what does Perfidia do? She tells him to get it up and humiliates him sexually. But it's like this like attention grabbing scene that you're like, where is this movie going? What is this tone going to be like? And then we see later on like how masterful it is.
Boners are masterful. Just like the V leads to the dick. I think somebody smarter than me, and maybe somebody that has gone deeply into this movie. I will say, whoever, like, I don't know if it's a combination of people, but the character development, and take any of the characters and any person who is acting in this movie, there is such a, you can have a story from each one of the characters, and maybe multiple of the stories. Like, they're so well defined on their own, and then being placed together. It's I kind of want to watch a second part to this movie. I don't know, in another world, possibly. Yeah. It just feels like a video game.
I would love to see just a movie about Benicio del Toro's character, like how he started a karate gym, and his little revolution that goes on the side, because he has people all over the place. He's been doing the revolution for a long time in a different way.
Dude, I love Benicio del Toro, one of my all-time favorite actors, and I love how there was not a single even iota of a moment where he was flustered. Just like ocean waves, and just cool as a cucumber, didn't give a fuck, even when he was potentially being arrested.
Hold over.
He's just,
you've been
dancing.
Drinking? You've had any beers?
Just a little bit. I've had a couple baby beers. Oh my God. Yeah, terrific. Anyway, I'll talk hours about this, but Perfidia Beverly Hills, crazy, certifiably so. And
she's what she
unnerved
was,
me.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to unpack, and I don't think I can do it because I'm not a woman who's had a child, and am not a revolutionary, nor yeah. black. But it comes to seem like, you know, she was born into this kind of revolutionary mindset early on, because that's what her parents did, her grandparents. Like that's the lineage she comes from, and she knows that child is not ghetto Pat. It's not Bob's. And I think there's a lot of guilt there, and she doesn't know how to handle that. This is a movie that I've been thinking about quite a bit over the past few days, because the motivations of the characters are so hard to kind of wrap your head around. And that one, especially of her leaving her newborn child and just going off and then ratting on everybody and going into witness protection. It's a hard character to understand.
Yeah, I don't think you're really going to understand it. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, even then, like, I'm slightly confused by the end of it. There's a letter that came in 2 years ago from the mom. Did it actually? Is she dead? I mean, Sean,
Bob write it? I don't. You know,
yeah.
I don't know.
Mr. Old Lockjaw said he put her in the ground. So it's like, I don't really know what's real, what's not real, but it sounded like, from when it was being read aloud, that Bob wrote it, because it seemed like some high motherfucker who was just like, scribble down some words. I can't be romantic, but I'm going to try my best.
Try my best.
It seemed like that, but I'll have to say, Jungle Pussy, being Jungle Pussy in this movie, she's a rapper. I don't know if you knew. No, Jungle Pussy.
I had no idea who she was, but she was captivating.
She was so, like, also her acting in that one single moment when she's like standing up talking mad shit and basically saying like, this is power, and then Perfidia Beverly Hills like shooting the security guard and saying don't move, but you can see that look of terror as well in Jungle Pussy's face, like, oh no, like we're
just
in
getting
it.
Real,
like we're yeah. I wasn't expecting that. I mean, yeah, this is power, but guys, this is like a WWE power. Like, we're, you know, affecting them, but we're not trying to kill them. We're just trying to get their money and go. That's when things became real. French 75, I should say this, is my wife's favorite cocktail of all time, as well as me. By
oh,
far.
Really?
Yes. And so
it's a great cocktail. I actually ordered one the other night with my girlfriend, and it was fantastic, but I ordered it specifically because we watched this movie.
Brilliant. Like, so I should, there's a derivation called the Summer 75 that has the same, similar ingredients. Sometimes there's a more focused, like, Brazilian style to it with, like, the sugar cane, but, like, and it's more citrusy on the Summer 75. That's what I'm talking about. But the French is, like, so close that you can pretty much call them the same. Absolutely stunning cocktail if it's made with, like, good fresh ingredients, which I would imagine if you're at your restaurant,
we make a great French 75.
Yeah,
fantastic.
Something good. Can we talk about haircuts though? Penn's hair. I mean, would you ever get your hair cut like that?
No, I had a friend in high school that had something similar, not quite that like that, but it kind of reminded me of it. Shaved head and then just bangs.
Wait, just bangs.
Yeah,
like Ronaldo.
Not like literally, just
like Ronaldo from back in the day.
Yeah, something. It was just weird.
I don't know. You know what? We know what's is weird, but another one of those like satires, the Christmas Adventurers Club.
When that shit rolled up, when that shit rolled up and you were like, okay, we're doing some Illuminati shit. Like, this is wild.
Yeah, but the music when, what's his name? Virgil. When Virgil's like driving in, or not Virgil, but what's his name? The killer. I can't remember, but basically when the killer's driving into the house and the house has like the underneath
the underground tunnels, yeah, and they get the into
headquarters,
the, yeah,
where it's like got Christmas music, and I was like, what is going on? A newborn king. I'm like, what is happening right now? And then you realize, of course, the Christmas.
What is it? All hail, yeah. Saint Nick.
All hail Saint. Which is not very different than like some organization that's like Hail Satan, right?
You know? Yeah, that's what it sounded like.
It's like the same thing, but you just have these white people and they're very old and they basically want to whitesplain everything and kill seemingly all the other. Anyway, it's a weird introduction, but also creepy. But that one in which that is, I think, needed for this movie to make
it's
it
so
odd.
It's such a goofy name for a club and it's so secretive too, which is great. But like, yeah, once they find out that Lockjaw possibly has an interracial kid and he had sex with, I mean, that's when, all right, we know what Lockjaw is doing. He's trying to find this kid, and I mean, he's doing a Maury Povich. That's like a climactic scene. You are the father.
If these lines intersect, we've got a problem. And I loved how in that moment of like, you are the father, he just goes, uh-oh. like a little kid, he's like looking up the scene. I think it was meant to be like that, but he looks up at her who's in the chair and he's on the ground. He's like, uh-oh. Like,
because he really wanted to be a Christmas adventurer. He really wanted it.
But he also knows he's going to get it. Like he's about to get it. Yeah. They're coming for him.
The action in this movie,
my God,
fantastic. I mean, the idea of like, you know, the car chase with the rolling hills and like that kind of, it kind of lulls you into this, you know, I don't know if you've ever driven on roads like that, but yeah, it's kind of crazy how like, you know, just over the pike, like if there's something there, you're going to hit it if you're going fast enough.
Oh yeah. And they're going fast, which is interesting because I was at the very beginning and even in the middle, I was like, this is so a very big lull, not to sleep, but one of intensity, and watching people trying to catch up to each other and then realizing the lines aren't going that fast and they're not actually driving fast. And then the last like minute, I was like, okay, I get it. We can get to something. Car crash, shoot them up kind of thing. Like what are we leading up to? But I think it was more of that video game. I just thinking like Rad Racer and having like a piano set to it, you know. I'll have to say Willa Chase Infinity. Wait, Willa Ferguson.
Yeah,
unbelievable,
fantastic.
Like it, again, each actor or actress on their own merit was that character. Like it was so believable, and I couldn't really say anything negative about pretty much any one of the characters.
Even the kids, interrogator.
The skateboards. Yeah. Oh God. Terrific. Right. Yeah. Even the kids, like when they're trying to cover for like Howard, when he got kidnapped, and they put out like that notice on the radio. Like, I don't know. Every character was really well chosen.
Yeah. Jason Finity was great. I saw her in a TV show called Presumed Innocent, and I was like, well, she's pretty good. And then
I haven't seen
it. Yeah. It's with your boy, Jake Gyllenhaal. So, you're gonna love it.
That's probably why.
But yeah, it's a good show, and she was great in that. I won't ruin anything. No spoilers for that. But yeah, everybody in this film, even like just the kids in the car going to the dance, and I just love that whole Leo scene where he's like, the "You guys good? Hey, SA. Hey, homie. Not you. Her."
Get you just in the fucking car.
Just a worried dad, man.
Anything you do to her, I'm going to do 9 times over to your family. He's like, what?
What?
What are you talking about? It's like, he's going insane. But, you know, as you might imagine, you'd probably do the same. And those, what are those beacons? I don't know what they, I can't remember what they actually call them, but those beacons, if you get 100 yards or meters from somebody, I don't know if those are real and they're just like a figment of, you know, the creation for this movie, but the sound they chose for this movie, so good. Cause like, and the, no spoiler alerts, this is actually out in the movies, but like at the, one of the last scenes where things are coming together and it's a very high paced chase scene, and what happens after, and we'll not mention, but there's a moment where the two of the Beacons are coming back together, and it's just so comforting almost, that music. It was like something from space. It's like this another video game from space, but I really like that, the idea of that. Basically, if somebody comes into your life and the sound happens, you can trust them with your life.
With your life, yeah.
Yeah.
Just got to say something.
And then, of course, you have code word.
Green Acres.
Green Acres, Beverly Hills, and...
It's all like shows from the 1950s.
Yeah.
60s, but, whatever.
But Bob is not very good at remembering all the code words. Do you think after 16 years you would be...
He fried his brain, dude. Like, there's...
30 years of... I'm a drug lover. I love alcohol. 30 years. What do you expect of me?
It's fantastic. I love Leo's choice of the sunglasses, too. And this kind of ties into another thought that I had after seeing it. And then I kind of confirmed what other people had thought of, that this is being kind of like a Star Wars film, but set in kind of like the real world. Because you have like the Jedi, you have the Yoda character, you have the evil, you know, could he be the father? I am your father, set in a desert, bathrobe. And then even Leo said that he picked out the sunglasses because he thought it looked cool, like a Boba Fett kind of character.
You know what? I saw them in the preview, and actually in the movie, he wore them such for like a short amount of time. I was very disappointed because the second he put them on, I was like, dude, he looks fucking awesome. And then, you know, there was, you know, he falls 40 feet and then is like, ah, damn, they're gone. That sucks.
But that fall,
oh, dude.
It was the fall and then the taser afterwards.
The taser, probably the hardest immediate laughter that I got in terms of like, oh my God. But the other scenes like had large amounts of long lived laughter. I mean, there was a lot. I mean, it really was like a funny movie, like Chicken Licking Nuggets.
Can't shut that plant down. I really like those Chicken Licking Nuggets.
It's like, oh no, those are my favorite nuggets. Those, I don't know.
That's what happens when you put immigrants in detention centers. You're not going to get your nuggets, man.
A day without a Mexican. So the one, there's so many scenes that I can actually go over. I think in particular, the driving scene towards the end, one of my favorites, of just that lull in the chase. Very short and probably not one you would actually think that I would appreciate. There's two others, but the skateboard scene in the hallway where like they could just yell to each other, but there are three kids on the skateboard, two of them like go the length of the hallway to come talk to Benicio del Toro. And it's just so funny. He's like, hey, and then like he's like came over on a skateboard. Hey, what's up? It's like, I want you to take him. And then like Leo's like, no, I can't go. Like, I have to be with you. And then he like goes back. And he's like, what about the other guy? And the other guy comes down the skateboard. I don't know why I liked it so much. It's very simple, but it was very effective as well.
One of the scenes that I really, really liked, and it kind of reminded me of like the Pulp Fiction scene with, him coming down and saving the guy in the basement. But it was when Willa's character was handed off to the neo-Nazis, and the tracker, the Native American, he like has a change of heart, and he's like, I couldn't kill her, and I can't leave her with these guys. So
yeah,
I'm gonna save her.
Yeah, that was one where it's interesting, like, because I ethically, morally, and initially didn't really understand that point, and I was thinking from his perspective, like, he's not doing this. He's being paid his wages. He's not, if that's your rule, that's your rule. That doesn't mean it's somebody else's rule. So like, he's taking it on himself to like make it their rule now. So it really was an ethical dilemma for him, clearly. Even in the sense of like, he kills people for a living. So it's one of those like, really? That's where you cut it off? It's like, you're not even doing it. So initially I had that reaction, like, wow, that's pretty extreme. I don't know if I really thought that character would do that. But then the second watch, I was like, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, you got to live by your rule. That's, you just got to do it. But she must. Oh, another shot where she got in the car and Paul Thomas Anderson, I assume, put the camera on the door and then she speeds off. And then like the angle is like, it's not like it's not parallel, but so it's perpendicular. And then like she zooms off, goes to the left, I believe, and the door shuts. And
oh, yeah.
It's like parallel with her face at the moment. I was like, oh, that's a good shot. I was like, I wish I could rewind this again. Like, this is so good. It's not like I could take out the four people in the theater and be like, oh, I'm going to get this and save it for later.
Yeah. PTA, love, man. He's great with the camera. I've seen almost every one of his films. And I still haven't seen Punch Drunk Love. Need to check that one out.
I've seen it. I'm typing in Punch Drunk Love instead of Paul Thomas Anderson. Yeah, I don't know which ones I actually haven't seen.
I watched There Will Be Blood with my girlfriend a couple nights ago. It was her first watch.
Oh my God. Yeah. What did she think of the first 30 minutes?
I mean, it captivating. It was all captivating. I think, you know, the first 30 minutes is like a silent film. It's just him digging up oil, getting his hands dirty. And then I asked her if she's seen The Master, and she's like, no, I don't know what that's about. Is it about golf? So
that's a good question though. I haven't finished Phantom Thread. I was like, this is, I don't know,
Inherent Vice. I haven't watched that either.
Daniel Day-Lewis was, I don't know, I just couldn't get into it. I think they make a good combination. So I've seen Boogie Night. I haven't seen Heart Eight.
Heart Eight's great.
I've seen Boogie Nights, Magnolia, Punch Drunk Love, There Will Be Blood, The Master. I haven't seen Inherent Vice. I haven't fully seen Phantom Thread, nor have I seen Licorice.
I didn't like Licorice Pizza. It's a kind of, it's a hang movie, but I didn't, I need to watch it again. Some people really like it. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's got Mr. Sean Penn, it appears. I don't even know what this movie is about, to be honest with you. But I'd be willing to try it. You know, I feel like he's a willing and able person to be able to sit down and just choose a movie. But Phantom Thread, it was like, I almost gave up on him entirely. Like, what are you doing? Like, I don't know. I just couldn't. It was like watching, what was that one movie that you forced me to watch, in the food one?
Oh, the Taste of whatever. Yeah.
The taste of plunging is what I think of it as. You know, Anderson's a vegan, so sometimes ideas may come and go, and sometimes those ideas may be good or bad. So don't.
Oh, this was a good one. I think this is like a one battle I think is going to have like a longevity of, you know, I think it's going to be like a Pulp Fiction kind of movie, like where people are going to talk about it from years on and be like, you need to check this out.
I agree, but I disagree to some extent. I actually think it's going to be more like the Big Lebowski or a Coen Brothers, like Fargo, where you have like Fargo's less, more into like the satire, more into the black comedy. And it's so dilute that to some extent. And I think it's more like a Coen Brothers flick instead of like a Pulp Fiction, where I think it's a little more intense, to be fair. Although it does have like the satire, certainly. But I think this is more suited for the Coen Brothers flick type. Essence, but
my point is, I think it's just going to have this like this breath of, in 20 years, like, oh, remember this movie.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I would say, you know, I haven't seen the rest of his movies, but like There Will Be Blood, Boogie Nights, and this are his top three.
I know. Check out The Master.
I've seen The Master. I own The Master.
Right. You got to do it again. Do it again, Jonathan. Do it again.
I didn't particularly like it, to be honest. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. I will follow Philip Seymour Hoffman and his cult-like gang into the depths.
You're gonna die?
No, not there, not that kind of depths. But you know, watch the movie.
Oh, so you're like, you'll go and rewatch his movies, not like
yeah. That's it.
Shooting up. Depths of hell.
Should we get into ratings?
Let's get into ratings and let's make this 45 minutes. This should be a lovely event, by the way. Did you know that Paul Thomas Anderson and Magnolia, I didn't know this until like recently. They did some like late night clips with Tom Cruise that they would like play on actual television. Please, I did not know this until like this week. I don't want to ruin it for you, but I don't know if he directed them, but it was in reference to the movie Magnolia, where Tom Cruise is playing his character. And I remember one, he's on the bed with like two chicks, and it like literally has like, I think, a phone number at the bottom, but he's basically playing this character. And they play them on like late night TV in the 90s. It's awesome.
That's wild.
Yeah.
So I would have loved to see that. Like, just turn on the TV. There's a Tom Cruise infomercial.
What is Tom? What is happening? But anyway, ratings. I'll go first since you went first last time. So I will say I think this movie is going to be a lot more, even than the first two watches. And I think it's even more complex than I was expecting. I think the scene at one of the scenes at the end of somebody passing away, although insignificant, probably has more of a meaning than I'm actually like alluding to or getting to. I think the movie itself is very well thought out and especially timely for the moment. I think it's so beautifully shot. There's so many scenes that made me laugh, like the tatami mats with Benicio del Toro, because it actually made me cringe when Leo was like running across to get to the restroom in his shoes. And finally, by the end, he's like, tatami, Bob, tatami mats, get off. I love that
impression.
I don't know. But I think what I really take away from it, I think of it as a video game, but more so that every single, I don't know many movies that I take a step back and be like, every single human being played this their character like so perfectly that everyone was just unbelievably believable, strangely enough. And I like the story overall. I want to see, it's probably going to ruin to have like a second iteration of this or some Star Wars, like we build a world, but let's leave the world as it is. But I can't give it a golden glasses, so I'm going to give it a 4.5 glasses. I thought it was one of PTA's best movies, and I put it in that top three category for him.
Yeah, I echo a lot of what you said. This is a movie that he's been working on for, gosh, 25 years or so. And wow, the fact that it's still this timely and our current age is pretty amazing. It's loosely based off of a Thomas Pynchon novel. I've never read Thomas Pynchon, but I kind of want to now.
Don't.
I kind of want to.
Oh, Vineland? No, don't. Don't do anything Pynchon does. It's dense. It's hard. It's difficult. Purposely difficult. You're not going to like it.
Okay. Maybe I'll get the audio book. But this movie, it was, when I was watching it and how it was like telling the story, and then once you get into the scene, I guess, where Will is at the dance and she has to go on the run.
Oh.
You just like the movie just doesn't stop.
Yeah.
It just keeps going. And it just ramps up and ramps up and ramps up. And it's like, I couldn't believe this was a 3-hour movie. It just went by. I think it's a masterpiece in a way that like we will look back in 20 years and be like, this was a defining movie of the decade. So I'm gonna kind of go. I was going back on the 5 golden glasses or the 4.5. I still think that this is not PTA's best film, but it is top 3. So 4.5.
Oh, nice. Yeah, it's for all the things I said, I'd have to go back and watch Boogie Nights to see like how this compares. It's just like the execute, and maybe I'll even go back in the future and watch it again and be like, damn, like these actors and actresses really nailed every one of these roles. They got to give it to them. I don't know, but we'll see. I think I would probably give Fargo 4.5 as well.
I mean, that's like, again, masterpiece, but I don't know if it's the Coen brothers' best film.
Oof.
Maybe Barton Fink?
A Simple Man.
A Simple Man.
Have you seen that?
I don't know. I have. I didn't really vibe with it.
There was one moment in that where I also was like, what do they do? Why are they doing this? What happened? This isn't what I signed up for. Like, I love you guys, but what is this? Anyway, we have no idea what we're doing next week, but we'll figure it out.
I'm going to Hawaii, so.
Oh, that's right. Go to Hawaii. Enjoy yourself.
Thanks, brother.
Mahalo.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.